This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. I want to thank you again for coming back this week and listening to another episode of this podcast. I know there are a lot of podcasts out there. In fact, I just heard this past week there are 1.75 million different podcasts in the world with over 45 million episodes. Wow. Well, we are part of that. We are just one of that 1.75 million, and we have well over 600 episodes we've had here. And I would imagine that not many of you, if any of you, have actually listened to each and every one of them. But if you subscribe to the Pod Letter, we have each week a suggestion in the archives that you can go back and listen to something you may have overlooked or may have heard and forgotten about or maybe didn't even know that we had talked with that particular person. So I suggest you kind of go back and you can hear that podcast suggestion if you just subscribe to the Pod Letter. So if you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there you will see an opportunity where you can not only become a friend of the Magic Word and help us with your financial pledge, but also for free you can sign up for the Pod Letter and get information each week, find out who it is we have on the podcast that week, and also who's coming up next week with a suggestion from the archives. Well, this week we are actually returning back to England. Last week we had an episode with John Allen. Great episode, great guy, very creative gentleman, and I like hanging out with him. And I recently then also had my friend Martin Cox, who had contacted me saying he had some people who were a couple buddies of his who were children's show entertainers and thought perhaps that the three of them might make for an interesting conversation and learning a little bit more about the similarities and subtle differences there are between children's show entertainers and venues, etc., in the U.S. versus the U.K. So I thought, what a great idea. I know there that the children's show market is very big, both in the U.S. and the U.K. So this is just a very brief sampling from a very high level, kind of looking over everything. There are a lot we could have had on as guests, but so I apologize if by those who have been left out, but we might get around to more of you in the future. And I appreciate suggestions that are made to this podcast. So this way that we can give you some variety from all different perspectives of magic, that is, of whether it's going to be for kids shows or cruise ships, from trade shows to working restaurants and theaters, mentalism and bazaar, basically pretty much the gamut. Everything that has to do with magic, we have conversations there. And again, you can pick that up in the archives as well. And if you just do a search, if you're looking for somebody, you can, or a topic, you can put that in the search bar, which is again at the website at themagicwordpodcast.com. Well, again, Martin Cox, who is known as Mr. Biscuit, which is his moniker he uses when he is entertaining family audiences. He used to do a lot of children's shows, but as he says in this episode, that he is no longer really focusing so much on the kids' shows, although he does do some family shows. But we also have Dave Allen, who is known as Mr. Dave, and then Paul Megrim, who is known as Colonel Custard. I want to also apologize a little bit because the connection that Paul Megrim had was a little bit sketchy. And so parts of this conversation, you can kind of hear him cutting in and out. And I tried to edit that as best I could, but I didn't want to leave out all of that so you can understand the context of what he was saying, if not the exact words he was saying. So I apologize for that, but it was just a little problem we had on his end when we were having all four of us in on the same conversation. Also, I want to mention that we do have this over on YouTube, which is supplementing the audio podcast portion of this podcast, so that way you can actually watch it and see the conversation that we had among the four of us, which is kind of fun then, too. And that is available at youtube.com/TexasMagician. And while you're there, please subscribe to our channel because eventually we hope to be able to monetize that there as well. Well, let me step out of the way and introduce our guests here this week. Please welcome Mr. Martin Cox, Dave Allen, and Paul Megrim here on The Magic Word. Well, Well, today I am excited about having not one, not two, but three guests, actually, who are joining us all at one time right now via Skype from over in England. I'm not sure exactly where in England that my guests are, but this will be a little bit interesting also because all three of these guys are great magicians, but they particularly specialize in doing a lot of children's parties. And I think it'd be interesting to compare and contrast children's events in the UK versus how they are done over here in the US. So with that, let me introduce, first of all, Dave Allen. Hey there, Dave.
Hello, Scott. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad that you're here, and I appreciate you taking your time this evening to be with us. And Paul Mingram, how are you, Paul?
Yeah, I'm very good. Delighted to be joining you.
Thanks again for you being here as well. And my good mate for many, many years, Mr. Martin Cox. Hey, Martin.
Hey, Scott. How you doing?
Fantastic. And particularly since I got all three of you guys in the same room then right now. This is really great. Tell me, where are each of you currently? Are you in London, outside of London, in one of the suburbs, or whereabouts are you each? Dave, where are you?
So I'm in Leighton Buzzard, Bedfordshire. So roughly about 40 minutes drive to London from where I live, and about 20 minutes on the train.
Okay. And how about you, Paul?
So if Dave's 40 minutes from London, I'm 46 minutes from London. Dave and I are live six minutes from each other. We're near neighbours. Nearest for me is probably, as people would know, would be Oxford. That's the nearest.
How close is Hertfordshire from you guys?
Well, for me, actually, I live in Buckinghamshire, Bedfordshire, which is where Dave is from, and Hertfordshire border. So I am actually on all of those and closest to Oxfordshire as well. So it's kind of like all of those four counties. They call it the southeast of England, but it's heading towards the Midlands.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. I'm familiar with Hertz because I had visited with Terry Seabrook a couple of times with him and his wife Mildred, and I've been to their conservatory club. Conservatory club. Did a little magic for the guys there around the pub once and everything. Anyhow, enough of me. Martin, are you downtown? You in the city?
Well, no, I'm just outside London. I'm about 30 minutes from London, and I'm in Hertfordshire. I'm in a little place called Bishop Stortford, which is near Cambridge.
Ah, okay. So the reason I was wanting to know exactly where you are, because those who are listening in the UK are familiar with not only you and your work, each of you, but also where you reside. But my question, I guess, has to do with a lot of times magicians who do children's parties, birthday parties in particular, work within their area, within their suburb, their little township or whatever. They're not necessarily traveling outside to go more than just a half hour away. So my question to each of you, let's start again then with Dave. Do you typically do birthday parties in and around your area? Do you go back outside that area frequently, or do you pretty much keep constrained to just one area?
Absolutely try to. So wherever possible on a weekend, I will stay 20 minutes from my base, basically. Mm-hmm. So those are around my local area, and that's perfect for me because it means I can fit in three or maybe even four parties a day. And then for those people that are interested in and they're out of my area, and when I say out of my area, I do include London in that, because although London is 40 minutes from me, a party in London is not 40 minutes away because London traffic is just horrendous,
right,
like in any city. So a London party, you know, can take up to 2.5 hours, even though it's only 40 minutes away. So in travel time alone. So I tend to try and keep those parties during the week. And then weekends, you know, Saturdays and Sundays, the core of my work, I try and stay as local as I can so I can fit in as many shows as possible.
And when you're working then in London, that's interesting. Of course, I understand about the traffic and trying to find parking and just the general traffic situation in large cities as it is in Houston and New York and a lot of other places, too. My question would be then, when you do those places or those parties then in the city, do you take the train or do you drive in?
So, no, I never take the train unless it's close up. So I do children's parties and magic.
Because you have so much stuff to carry.
Yeah. Yeah, it's my children's show is pretty big. So it's probably It's probably way too big.
Okay.
A lot of times I have lots of big toys, lots of big props and backdrops and speakers and loads of stuff. So it's a car full of stuff. So I would never do that on the train. That would be too much hard work.
That's kind of what I was thinking, too. And I want to get back to the size of your show in a minute. But what about you then, Paul? What about where do you concentrate your performances?
Yeah, if I can, I mean, it's basically a price structure that I work to, that if I can fit those three parties in a day, the same as Dave, and I'll do a 10 to a quarter to 12, the morning slot, then a 1:45 to 2:30, which will just be a magic show, and a 4:30 to 6:15. They're the three slots. Now, they don't all come in and always come in, but if I cover two or three of those bases, the problem comes for any working professional who's out there all the time, that if somebody, a mum rings up and says, right, I want you between 3 and 5 in the afternoon, that means you're very limited to the amount of work that you can do on that particular day. So of course I can do 3 until 5 for you, but it would have to be an extra fee on top of that. Or more to the point, if you want a discount, if you go to these times, then I can do it much cheaper for you. There are exceptions. There are big company fun days, which they'll have you for a whole day. There is a wedding when they'll say, right, we want you to entertain the kids and we just want you between 2 and 4, whatever. They're more than welcome to have whatever time slot they like, but there is a price attached to it. So, you know, you can add a few quid on top just because of the you're going to lose out on another booking. Now, if it's a corporate booking or if it's a wedding or whatever, they don't mind paying the extra. And some people would say, well, you charge more for a wedding than you do for another slot. I don't at all. It's just the fact that my earning potential is going to go down if you're taking over two time slots there at that particular time. But it's so, I mean, I've taken bookings for other entertainers before, and they've already got a booking in their diary between 3 and 5. And you go, well, you're only fitting one other show in on that day.
Right.
That's it. You know, you're very limited. But also the price structure again. They will see me in Oxford or local and they'll say, oh, we live in London or we live in Birmingham or whatever. We want you to come there at the weekend. Of course, but you can add some serious money on top for me traveling there. However, if you do it as an after school on a Tuesday or a Thursday or whatever, it starts at 3:30, the party. They're normally done by 5:30. It's a really early night for the kids. They've already had their tea anyway, and you'll get, you know, X amount of pounds off by just having it as an after school. They're the most popular parties for me. Actually, the weekends are the most popular, but I say the weekends are so much more popular than weekdays, because then you can have a time slot you want. It's so much cheaper for you. The kids are straight from school. It's so much fresher. And it, you know, it's a win-win all round is what I would actually say. But the truth is that the weekday parties, you're not rushing to the next party. You can do a much bigger show. You know, you're not thinking, I've got to pack this down and quickly get on to the next one. You know, we try our best to make a trip to be able to pack it down and then be able to get out the next one, rather than taking so many trips from the van or the car or whatever. But it's inevitable that, you know, Dave, very similar to me, that we have a lot of props, you know, a lot of things. You know, we like buying toys. We can't help it.
Well, that's a great tip as far as the pricing suggestion, because you're giving more value to, well, they're giving the same show, but it's just they're having to work within your schedule then also. That's a great little pricing tip. What about you, Martin? What kinds of area do you work? Do you kind of work all around where you live? Do you come into town a lot? Or
Well, I don't really do that many kids parties but anymore. I go out as a family entertainer, as a character called Mr. Biscuit. So at present time, I'll just go anywhere anybody books me. That's how I go. As Mr.
He's not
Biscuit.
Fussy.
But I'm not fussy. But before, I guess I was a bit the same. I wouldn't really go out of my area. But I used to do a lot of covering for magicians. So I was known as a sort of covering magician. So if someone was sick or they got a double booking, they'd pass it on to me, because I don't really promote myself out as a children's entertainer.
Just a family entertainer, so that means more like for a larger, like a picnic kind of a thing or something.
Yeah.
And so as Mr. Biscuit, I think it's interesting too that you have like a character. Do you have an outfit and everything perhaps that you wear?
Yeah, he wears a red suit and a white shirt with a tie and a biscuit waistcoat with biscuits on, or cookies you'd call them, cookies on, and a sort of a bowler hat I have a juggling bowl hat now that I wear, mm-hmm. but that's what I used to wear. So he's just a character that I keep separate from my adult work, because we find that a lot of English companies, and that if you do children's, they won't put you as an adult entertainer.
Do you have your website set up so it's different then as well? A lot of us will have different pages, so this way you can direct an audience to saying, here is my website / birthdays or / corporate or / whatever.
Yeah, I don't put it on the same, it wouldn't be on the same site. My adult site was completely different from my Mr. Biscuit site.
Okay.
Yeah. So separate.
But I assume that you have a lot of props also, as these other gentlemen.
No. I'm very in the suitcase. It's a very small, compact show that I have.
Okay.
Because there's so much that, like, Paul and Dave and other local magicians have got such big shows, and they specialise in children's. I didn't really want to go down that route. That was the thing I didn't really want to do, and I sort of fell into children's magic per se, and then Mr. Biscuit was born, and then I mainly just covered other magicians. I used to do quite a few in my early years, but now I still only cover if someone can't do it, they suggest me.
Right. Dave, when you were saying that you have just a lot of equipment that you carry around, you said you include like speakers and everything else. I mean, mics and a backdrop and whatnot. So that is a lot of stuff to set up, perform with, and tear down. So I would think that more than half your time is actually the setup and tear down.
No, not the case. I've been really strict on what my procedure is for setting up. I mean, in the past, I've actually produced a few DVDs on the subject that were sold, and perhaps still are actually, by Murphy's Magic. I don't know if anyone uses DVDs anymore, but I mean, I did back in the day. I'm quite strict on, although it's an overused statement, packs small plays big. I've got packs up quick plays big. So I have what we call them spider frames.
Spider frames,
so,
sure.
Yeah. So spider frame, 5 seconds, that's up. All the material is connected to it. Velcro's on, that's done. I use a Bose system. So it's a completely standalone Bose speaker that's actually battery powered. So I don't even need to now look for a socket in a room. I can just go anywhere in a room. The same with my microphones. They're all battery powered, lithium battery powered. So that just sets up and it's in the box, ready to go. I literally just turn it on. I have a roll-on table. My roll-on table literally unfolds. All my equipment's in the roll-on table. And then any other, the bigger props, that I'm using that day. So I change my show constantly. You know, you mentioned about, Martin mentioned about children's shows versus family shows. So I've always been a big believer in that, even though it's a children's show, it's still a family show.
True.
Playing for every single person in that room. So I'm doing, you know, floating table. I'm doing levitations. I'm doing a big prop, a big ending, so that when people are coming to pick their children up, if they haven't stayed, they're seeing a big spectacle of a show. So there's always one or two bigger props that come in with me as well, to make sure that I'm standing out against the crowd, as it were.
And I'm assuming that you have different pricing structure for whatever value you're providing. If you come in with an illusion, it costs more than if you don't, for an example. Or is it all the same?
No, not at all. I've always been a little bit higher priced. I've always tried to pride myself in being a little bit more expensive than the rest in my area. And so it's one price. I do different packages. So I do a package where we do the games and some activities, and then the magic show. So a full 2-hour event. I do an hour and a half event, and then I do a 45-minute show. But they're all the same. They get the same value. They get the same equipment, the same illusions. Everyone, you know, I try and just give as much as I can give and give as big a show as possible.
Sure.
And what I'm trying to give is people walking away going, wow, that wasn't like the average birthday party. I enjoyed that just as much as the children, because I am, like Martin said, because I'm a performer for adults as well. I have an illusion app that I tour the country with at holiday parks and things like that, and I do close-up magic. When I do a children's show, it's just an extension of me. Yes, there might be 5-year-olds there, but I'm still playing for adults as well. So I just try and give a big show. But in answer to your question, I can set up in 15 minutes and break down in about the same time.
That's pretty quick. That leads me to another question that I want to ask you, Paul, then also having to do with the timing of that and quiz shows and games and puzzles and things like that. You were talking about doing a show between, let's say, 3 and 5. Usually when people in the U.S. Will book a birthday party, it's for less than an hour. It's about we have like 45 minutes for you to do the kids. And depending upon their age, obviously, it has to do with their attention span, whether you're going to do a half hour or you're going to be doing a little bit longer or whatever. So is that something that is offered by a lot of kid show magicians or family show magicians in the UK that we don't over here, and that is game time with the children? Do you offer that? Is that a regular kind of a thing, Paul?
I think if I'm talking for most children's entertainers in the UK, I mean, obviously, entertainers do their own slightly different things, but I would say generally it would be a one-hour package or a two-hour package. So a one-hour package would be a magic show, and a two-hour package would be games and a magic show. So you can either entertain the kids for the whole party with the food break in the middle, or mum can organise some games and then feed them and then magic show. Or some entertainers like to do the magic show first and then wave goodbye with the kids on an incredible high, leaving mum to kind of go, what am I supposed to do with them now? I mean, that's a whole debate in itself. I think the easiest way for an entertainer is let the kids come in for 10 minutes because you'll get the ones that are going to turn up late. The entertainer's got the kids when they're really focused and they're not high on all these additives with all the sweets and whatever else. They come in to see the show and you can organise the room. Then you leave them on a real buzz, and then the parents appreciate it. My goodness, the entertainer had them all sat on their bottoms. They're all, you know, and then suddenly it's into bedlam. Well, I don't actually do that theory because I like to do it the other way around, whereas mum's pulling her hair out with the games and thinking, oh my goodness, when's the entertainer going to turn up, do the food? While the food's going on, I can set up my magic show. And when they finish their food and they sing happy birthday, then over to me. And I will hopefully capture the whole room for the last bit. So they've gone from bedlam to this guy has got the focus of the kids, and you know, that way round. So entertainers, some people do it one way, some people do it the other way. But if they're just booking me for a magic show, I will tend to do it that way round. But if they're booking me for the whole lot, well, you know, just feed them in the middle. Yeah, but mums, I say mums, it's generally mums that make the decision, not dad. So mums generally go either I'll do half of it or you do the lot.
And do you also have a large show, kind of like what Dave does, as far as packing in a lot of stuff and your backdrop and curtains and larger illusions as well?
Yeah, it's a big show. It's no bigger than Dave's, but Dave's got his packing organised, which I never quite have. There are just different things that I have to take into my show that, you know, like a unicycle, for example, you can't put that in a roll-on box. So that, unfortunately, is another trip to the van. You know, so it's not a bigger show than Dave's, but it just doesn't pack quite as tight as Dave. So it takes me a little bit longer in the setup and the pack down. But because we're in we chat all the time, you know, in fact, the three of us chat all the time. Sure. But with Dave and I, you know, Dave said, there's a new Bose system out. You want to get this one? It's like, oh, OK, that's going to be more money, isn't it? But, you know, on Dave's recommendation, it's like, it's really good. Then I go down the same route. So, a bit longer to set up and to pack down, but certainly no bigger show.
Martin has a character as Mr. Biscuit. What is your character known as there, Paul?
For the children's stuff, I go under the name of Colonel Custard.
Colonel Custard. And Dave, you are who?
Magic Dave.
Magic Dave. Martin, I want to get back over to you then a minute also. We talked briefly before we started this discussion, I mean yesterday, just you and I, and I was asking about doing other shows in the UK for children, particularly school shows and library shows. And you said there is a market for school shows, but not so much for library shows as there is in the US. Is that true? Is that kind of – do you want to elaborate a bit more on that?
I think that's pretty true, that some magicians do safety and bullying and things shows.
In their school shows. Yeah.
In the school shows. But the libraries don't tend to book magicians or anything, not that I know of. Huh. I don't know of any British magician that do library shows, but that may be a market that we should look at. Oh, Dave's just put his hand up.
Okay, Dave, what do you think?
They used to do a lot. I had a contract for about 3 years with libraries, actually, Martin. The whole of Bedfordshire libraries, all of them. About 3 years in a row, I did them. Great fun. Didn't you do them at one point as well, Paul? Did you do any?
Yeah, absolutely. And there was a market last year for them as well, where I wasn't doing that market, but they were basically saying, let's give you 30 shows. Yeah, I mean, that's got a little bit quiet this year, but it's certainly, I think it's going to be back again. But,
yeah. That was the same with me. I had about, they had about 30 libraries. You got a little bit less than your normal market rate, but that was based on you doing more. And I was, sometimes it was three libraries a day in the summer holidays for what they were doing, a reading challenge, you know, things like that. So there is a definite, there are library shows. They will come back as well. Yeah.
And what about having a theme? I know in the U.S., again, from, and I'm not speaking from personal experience. I've done a lot of things within magic, and I've done a lot of kids shows, but I really haven't done any school assemblies per se, nor library shows. But I know a lot of my friends here who do those shows, certainly. And it used to be, from what I understand, years and years and years ago, you did not have to have anything more than just an entertaining program to go into a school. As things progress, it's kind of like for them to approve you, you have to have a theme that is approved, whether it's going to be bullying or I don't know. There has to be something that has a message that's approved by the school before that you do it. And so you're just not coming in and doing a standard magic show. Is that something kind of the same over there? Paul, how about you?
I was piecing together your question there, but I'm going to answer the question that I thought I heard from what you said.
You're cutting in and out a little bit there.
I'll try again. take two. So it always used to be a case with magic shows, for me personally, that they would, a school would book you, whether it was end of summer term or Christmas term, just to have a magic show, just to give the kids some fun. But in other times of the year, it's becoming more and more difficult now for a school to find a budget to just book you for a magic show. So therefore, theme shows where there's an education element to it is certainly the way forward, but it's not the direction I've personally gone with it. So yes is the answer to that. School, I think, is more likely to book you, but I don't do a reading week or a dinosaur show or whatever else in that way.
So, Dave, any comment on your side?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I started my business it was around the year 2000, I started up my company. I did my first school show, absolutely loved it. Just my normal standard box standard magic show, but just enjoyed the element of having, 200 children in front of me and teachers either side of them telling them to be quiet if they even opened up their mouth and not the right moment, and thought, this is great. I've got such a captured audience. So I designed a road safety show, which I then pitched to the local council, and they said, that's a really great idea. We love it all. Can we work with you on making the message a little bit clearer? And I said, yeah, no problem at all. And then what was born was another character called Captain Safety. And basically it took on another persona where I performed magic, ventriloquism, and even songs. I even sung in this show. And I was at one point seeing they had started hiring theatres for me and bringing the children in to see the show by coach loads. So in one day I was seeing like 3,000 students, in shows. And it was a massive, massive, massive thing for quite a long time, for about 15 years near enough I was doing those shows.
Okay.
And then unfortunately the department that were booking them in the council collapsed, and they got rid of the department. The budget all went, and that's when they stopped. Although I get a few here and there,
not like you did before though.
Not as many, but loved it. Really great to do them.
Right. Martin, do you see there are a lot of competitors within the market for family shows?
Not so much for family shows. I think mainly for children's shows. Definitely, there's quite a few magicians who pop up, and they don't tend to last very long if they're not very good. Like near me, my nearest real competition lives in Harlow, which is about 16 miles away. But I don't really consider them as competition because we are all so different. Like Dave's so different to me. Paul's so different to me. I run my show a different way round when I used to do them regularly to Dave and Paul. So, you know, I just think it's so there isn't that much competition. The problem here is more or less a price war. Parents tend to go for the cheapest. So once they've booked you and seen you and other parents have seen you, then you tend to get booked more and rather than just the advertising and stuff. Though they do have on Facebook groups and stuff, they have a mummy's Facebook group and stuff like that. And they recommend magicians and stuff who they've seen. So that's where the bulk of people who find out about you go through them things. So most work comes from recommendation.
Right. I would think also the same thing, like at least when I work birthday parties, there will be other children who are there whose parents are picking them up, or they're telling their parents, hey, I want to have that magician at my party. And so one party begets another. And I think that's probably universal. Wouldn't you say so, Paul?
Absolutely. You know, when I lecture, you know, I say to magicians, if you've got 25 kids at this party, you only need two bookings. You only need two of those children to say they want you for their birthday party.
Good point.
And if you get two bookings from every party you do, you're going to be snowed under in absolutely no time whatsoever. So in a way, it should be an incredibly easy market to thrive and survive in. You know, I mean, yes, there is the social media and you know, it plays a massive part. It doesn't play a massive part in my industry, unfortunately, because I'd like it to play a bigger part. But if the phone or the email or whatever it is starting to come in from just those two kids, and hopefully there's going to be more than two that love your show in there, then you should be able to expand in that way. So
right. Yeah. Also, Dave, is this a market over in your country as well, and that is for bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs? I mean, are they just as popular as birthday parties as well?
The reason why I'm smiling and laughing is the answer is yes.
Okay.
The answer is I don't enjoy them. They're very, very hard work.
Yeah,
I tend to put my price up because it's almost like danger money, in my opinion, for a bar mitzvah. but mitzvahs, generally speaking, they want close-up magic rather than, you know, a kid's show, because when they're not kids anyway. The bar mitzvah children, I've always, and I don't, you know, mean to be sort of, you know, tar everyone with the same brush, but they're very hyped up, they're very excited, and you know, they tend to come from a very wealthy background, and a lot of money is being spent on the events, and they just tend to be quite hard work. I know some people really enjoy them. I've just yet to do one where I've really enjoyed it. So when they come in, I just kind of, the price goes up and I go, right, let's get this over and done with. So there's definitely a market, but not one that I thrive in.
Okay. Paul or Martin, you have a comment on that from your experience?
I used to do it. I'd done about four or five, and after the fifth one, I decided this is not the market I'm suited for.
Okay.
And that's putting it in a nice way.
Yeah.
But I have made two bar mitzvah boys cry, so I don't know what it means.
Yeah.
But I would think also birthdays, as we are getting older, we are finding some people we are entertaining are the children of those who we had entertained in the past. Talking about where you have some kids who are saying, hey, I want to have that guy at my next party also. I've had things, speaking of bar mitzvahs, I had a bat mitzvah a while back in which I did something for a young lady. And she said, well, I want to have you for my daughter's bat mitzvah because you did mine. It's like, oh, man, now I really feel old. So I'm sure that's probably happened somewhere for you guys also with birthday parties of being booked saying, you did my party, I wanted you to do my child's seventh birthday party or whatever.
Well, I'm far too young, so I'll have to hand that over to the other two gentlemen.
I think that's my biggest fear when they say, oh, you done my mum's birthday and now you're doing my daughter's birthday.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, that's pretty I really don't want that said. That's why really I killed off, but Mr. Biscuit's taken a real back burner for me. I really just don't hardly do any of his shows at all. Again, it comes from covering or people who've booked me before.
Right.
I've asked for that character to be dusted off and come out. And I think it's that mental thing of me thinking I want to be remembered as Mr. Biscuit as a good magician, though, rather than Mr. Biscuit, the old guy who's not very good anymore.
That's true. That's true.
It's funny, Scott, you say about, you know, do any of us do theme shows? And when Martin says he made two kids cry at a bar mitzvah, that's his bullying theme show that he does. He does it for bar mitzvahs. But just to answer the question there about doing bar mitzvahs, and you know, I'm going to name drop here, but was having a chat with Matt King the other day, and part of the success that he said was to take on any show wherever it would be. Mm-hmm. And look where it got him, 20 years in Las Vegas. Well, unfortunately, this is why I'm still stuck around Oxford, because I don't have that attitude. And I say, I'm more than happy to take on your booking, but I'll take it on for you know, in the way like this. And if they said to me, we just want you to concentrate on the 12 and 13-year-olds and not the adults, I would say, but I'm a family entertainer. Mm-hmm. And I have to be able to entertain everybody, not to turn up to an event and then the booker to say, no, just see the 12 and 13-year-olds, because I want to play the room. And they need to know that before I take on the booking. So therefore, you're not stuck with a group of 12, 13-year-olds that don't appreciate it. However, if you've got a group of 12 and 13-year-old at a bar mitzvah who are loving it, appreciating it, and respecting everything, then by all means do another 10 tricks for them. So I need to have that flexibility to be able to see everybody and not to concentrate just on those 12, 13-year-olds, you know.
You hit on something there, Paul, that I was going to bring up, and that has to do with party planners. They're big in the U.S., where there will be a parent, for birthday parties in particular, who will just make a one-stop call, basically, to a party planner and say, it's my child's birthday. Could you just, you know, have X dollars a mail or pounds available to spend for this? And that will include the cake and the party decorations and the entertainment and party favors and games, whatever it is. So they are in charge of doing that. And typically, of course, they're trying to do it for the least cost possible, which is why, Martin, back to your point, it does a lot of times come down to being price driven, in which they will kind of make a call through their directory and, you know, to different magicians saying, hey, I've only got 100 pounds to give you or whatever today, are you willing to do it? And or more, but then they got to take a fee out of that or whatever it is. It, kind of like an agent, but they're really not an agent. They're a party planner. Is that something that is over there? I mean, is it a big thing? Do you have a lot of party planners doing that, Dave? Or Paul? Go ahead, Paul.
No, go on, Dave. You go for it.
Dave, you want to answer that first?
Sure. They certainly are party planners. They tend to be in my experience personally, they tend to be the London gigs, and they tend to be the people that are actually trying to spend more money rather than less money, and you know, they tend to be a bigger event, and I won't be the only thing there. So, you know, there'll be a bounce house, there'll be candy floss, there'll be popcorn, there'll be you know, maybe they've got a juggler or a stilt walker. You know, they tend to be a bigger affair, and they'll have lots of big decorations and, you know, I'll be one small cog in that big machine of a party. Those tend to be the ones that I get involved with party planners, and they either are, you know, a very wealthy family or the bigger events, kind of the big corporate events. Generally speaking, I'm dealing with, you know, the mum or the dad organising their little child's birthday party.
But with those party planners, do they in the UK tend to minimise magic? In other words, magician. They're looking. Are they looking for the cheapest person to plug into that?
Not in my opinion. No. Okay. They're, from what I've had in the past, they are looking for the quality of the entertainment.
Ah, because their reputation is on stake too.
Exactly. So they're coming across. If they know of me, if they've seen my work, then that's generally how I'm getting those kind of calls. And then sometimes they're just coming on back of the website and they're going, we like what you've got on offer here. You seem like you might do a good job at this party. What can you do? What they do tend to do is they do tend to dictate a lot more than a normal party would be. Hmm. You know, like we was talking about earlier on, the structure of the party. They told us sort of saying, we want you to perform at this point. And I would say, no, it doesn't really work there. I would like to perform in this way. And then you would tend to sort of fight a little bit with them because they've got a certain way they want to do it. And you've got a certain way you want to do it. Where normally a mum or a dad would just go, you're the boss. You know what you're talking about. You tell us what you want to do. But party planners, they think they're the boss.
Right.
And you've got to kind of do what they want you to do. And at the end of the day, I generally, you know, as long as I feel it won't affect my show or the entertainment too much, I tend to go along with what they want because at the end of the day, they're still the client.
They're the client.
I want to be, they're the client. And yeah, that's what I do.
Paul, how about you? Any comment on that?
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. But I think my guess would be, and it is only a guess, that there are very, very few party planners in the UK compared to America.
Hmm.
I don't think we generally have that over here. Yes, there are party planners. Yes, there are, you know, nannies who are organising events. I mean, I know that's not a party planner as such,
right.
But not 99%, it's coming from the mum that will book us direct. I mean, yes, the company fund days and that sort of thing, but more often than not, it'll come direct from a mum, not a party planner to book us. You know, that's, I think that's generally how it goes.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. I didn't think there were as many over there as there are here. I mean, you get a lot of calls from that over here. Now, when you're, Martin, doing family shows, are those coming directly from, and I assume sometimes, and a lot of times even, in your experience, might come from a company in which you're saying, hey, we're going to be having an employee party for the families. So you're being employed by a company as opposed to a family in some of those cases.
Again, not necessarily. I mean, I've done some families. I do near enough every year do something for, it's the grandparents who book me to do their family, so they've got their family coming round in the summer,
right,
for something, and they'll book me, and I'll do a parlour show, or I'll do something in the garden for them. The other thing is, we're going back to your party planner thing. Again, like we said, there is that many, and corporate here don't tend to have family picnics and things like that. I've done one or two here in where I live, and then it came to the third one and I got cancelled at the last minute because the workers didn't want them to spend money on this picnic.
Hmm.
They'd rather have a bonus at Christmas.
Right.
So they'll
take the cash, not the party.
I think this is more of an American thing. Mainly American companies do the family picnic. Not many British companies do that. And the other thing is that within that, you normally get booked as almost like a babysitter. So it's
true.
Like, right, you come, you go in that room, we'll put all the kids in that room, and all the adults go outside and get drunk.
Yeah.
You just entertain the kids. Yeah. And that's why I strive as a family entertainer rather than a children's entertainer, because I say, well, I don't work like that. Here's some numbers, call these people.
Mm-hmm.
I just won't do them anymore.
Paul, you had alluded earlier about giving lectures. Is there something from your lecture on children's entertainment that are some key points that you can share with us?
Well, I've had two lectures that I've done. The first lecture that was about the business side of the entertainment, so there was no tricks whatsoever. The second lecture, which I'm kind of in the middle of now, is all about the tricks that I've put in the lecture. Now, I think the business one is the far more important one, you know, to how to get the business, how to get repeat bookings from business. I'll give you a little tip from that, one bit of advice in a second, for anybody listening. But actually, I think when you go to magic clubs, as much as people want to be doing more parties, they're thinking that if I have the wow factor from a magic trick, I will then be able to earn a lot more money from going out and doing parties. And to be able to learn the secret of a magic trick is not necessarily the way to run a successful business. So here's a little business tip. And this is a long time since I've done this particular lecture for the business side of it. But so at the end of a party, a mum comes up to you or with a child and says, oh, I really enjoyed the party today. Have you got a business card? He's like, yeah, of course. Hold on a second. I can't find a business card. I tell you what, let me just write your number down. Are you going to be in about 7, 8 o'clock tonight? What time's bedtime for the kids? Wouldn't be a good time. 8 o'clock. I tell you what, I'll give you a ring at 8 o'clock. Get a bit of pay. Oh, I have got a business card. Anyway. 8 o'clock, I'll give you a buzz tonight. Take my card anyway, but I'll ring you. Now, you always had those business cards there ready to go. She's getting a phone call at 8 o'clock tonight. And I tell you what, they're not talking tonight about Magic Dave or Mr. Biscuit. They're talking about Colonel Custard. Unfortunately, in 3 days' time, that child could be going to a Mr. Biscuit party or a Magic Dave party or somebody else and have a fantastic time. But... 3 days earlier, we've had that phone call. Her child's birthday party's in 6 months' time. She's gone, oh, my child is talking about nothing else. Well, she is tonight, and she's talking a bit about my show the next day and a tiny bit next week. And in 3 weeks' time, she can't remember what my name is. So strike while the iron's hot. Bring them that evening. Have a conversation. You're very, very busy, but can book it in on Saturday or whatever, and job done. So... there's a little tip for you. Hey,
that is a good idea.
Worth listening to the podcast just for that.
That explains a lot, Miss Paul. That explains a lot.
Are you bullying me?
Dave, did you mention earlier also that you had some DVDs available or something that Murphy's was selling or Penguin?
Yeah, so I produced over the years. I've had 4 DVDs that I produced, and Murphy's have... supplied. I've also done a couple of different lectures which I've run on the circuit. Never lectured in America. I'd like to. Anyone listening out there, I'd like to lecture in America. Oh, there you go. That's one of my DVDs.
Party time. Magic Dave.
That was my first one. So I've got Party Time, Party Time 2, Bish Bash Bosh Magic, and the final one was Back to the Future Bookings. There you go. So that was the last one that I produced. So I lectured all over, not all over Europe, but across Europe, lots of European destinations. Never lectured in America, would love to. I've got a real passion for what I do, and I love to share. I enjoy sharing what I've learned over the years. Absolutely.
On those DVDs, do they include both tricks as well as marketing tips?
Yeah. So the first two, the party ones, were kind of fly on the wall kind of camera work, so literally walking into a party, watching me set up, watching me play games, see how I control kids, everything, warts and all, things going wrong, how I handle it, and the magic show, and just sort of literally watch how it unfolds. So those were the first two, and then the third one, Bish Bash Bosh, was a more traditional, here's a trick, here's how I do it, here's what you need, this is where you can buy it from. And then Back to the Future Bookings was a little bit different. So that was more talking about the business side of things as well. So it was a 2-DVD set. So it talks about how I use promotion, how I market, how I even take a phone call. There's even a bit on there of me talking to a customer, and also a bit of a theatre show And just what I do and why I do it and how I do it, pretty much.
I know, of course, Murphy's Magic Supplies is really a wholesaler to magic shops, and so they don't retail. So where can they go, I assume, to your website in order, if someone's interested in ordering these?
Yeah. If you go to my website, magicdave.co.uk, that'll get you there. And there is a shop section where you can still buy the DVD. I think I've still got some somewhere.
Okay.
I've got some for sale.
Yes, there you go. Martin's got some.
Martin's got the used ones, yeah.
Not much call for DVDs these days, you know, but I've had a few sold over the years. I'm happy, and I've had a few props that I've made that I've sold and bits and pieces. Yeah, like I say, I'm passionate about what I do, and I do love to share it. Obviously, it's nice to get money, but it's nice to sort of be recognised by your peers as someone sure. who's, you know, good at what they do, and they appreciate it as well. So I've always loved that element of it.
Well, Paul was kind enough to share with us a great tip then also. Have you got something from your experience that you can share with the listeners?
I guess my best tip, I mean, I've always done a similar sort of thing in the fact that I want to give out my business cards, but I actually tell them they're going to take my business cards. I make sure that my business card is quite an appealing fact and that people are coming to me and asking for my business card. So what I've done over the years is I've always made my business cards like a postcard size, so quite a big thing. And then I have in my shows, I always have a character who's a cow, a big cow puppet. And I've always done a big photo of her in different costumes and different outfits and other bits and pieces. And at one point, although I don't have it anymore, there was even an app that you could download on your Apple devices of a game that I designed with her. So on that card, it told you where to download the app and all that kind of stuff. So I've always kind of gone at the end of the show, if you want your souvenir postcard of Daisy the Cow, you know, come and see me after shows. So they're literally scrambling to grab this card. And then as a flippant comment, I would always say to the parents, I've accidentally put all my details on the back of the souvenir card. Sorry about that. The printer's made a mistake. So if you do need my number, that's on the back. So it was always a kind of like, you know, it was a funny gag, but it was a really nice way that, and I always tell the children to stick it on their fridge. So I would say, if you stick that on your fridge, it's really cool because it's like magic. I'll then appear at your birthday party. So again, another little gag, but you know, that always made the parents laugh, but it was a nice way just to make sure I sort of in my head was thinking all these children have got Daisy the Cow photos on their fridge with my details on. So
I bet they do. Nasty.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Martin, what about you? Any good marketing tips or business tips or
really,
performance?
I did have a lecture that I performed at what convention was it? I've forgotten already.
Kidology.
I done Kidology in the UK. I done a lecture there. It was well received, but I didn't have anything for sale at that time.
What was one of your biggest tips from that lecture?
One of my biggest tips: don't have something for sale. And then they invited me back a couple of years later, and I lectured again. I had things for sale that time. So really, because I don't really market myself as that anymore. Mr. Biscuit went from and Dave and Paul's done this. I went to cruise ships in the end, so most of my Mr. Biscuit work was on cruise ships. Mm-hmm. So my tip is don't go for an agent as a family entertainer on cruise ships. Go direct.
As far as trying to get booked on cruise ships, you mean?
Yeah. Yes. Go direct rather than through somebody.
Whenever I first started working on cruises, I had learned just the opposite, in which I went through an agent as opposed to going to the cruise ship themselves, because when I had spoken with other cruise ship magicians, they were saying, if you do send out material to these ships and then whether you do or don't, let's say you don't get any callbacks or doing something, and then you go to an agent, they will ask you, who have you already contacted? Because they're not going to go back to you know, the Caribbean or whatever, you know, line, because they've already said no once. So they don't want to bring someone and represent someone else who has already seen your material. They would rather present it, and they've got the relationship, the agent does. Yeah, you're going to make more if you go direct, but that's not easy to go direct. Well, it goes back to the party planners and for birthday parties. Yeah.
Well, most cruise ships have a department that just deals with children's entertainment. So that's where you need to pitch it. You need to go directly to them. For me,
how do you find that? Personally, how do you find those people?
I've done it accidentally, because I got on cruise ships as Mr. Biscuit by a complete accident.
How was that?
One of my close colleagues got the cruise ships, was on the cruise ships, and asked me to do them a favour and do two, because the agent was looking for someone to cover two ships. So I took them two bookings. I went on, I'd done them two bookings, and they liked me so much that they contacted the agent, and unfortunately that other magician got thrown off the ships for something.
Okay.
That sounds bad, doesn't it?
It did sound bad.
But that they lost their bookings, basically, and they asked me to cover them. And then I went from that agent to another agent, who then sort of would muck me about a lot. But I'd already got a line in with the cruise entertainer, what do they call them, youth director. And mm-hmm. the youth director then put me in touch with the actual person who books, and then then I went direct after that. So I sort of went in that way, but that if you go to their, not to their website, because that's the way, but if you ring the office and ask to speak to the youth department, you can get to them that way, and then ask them if you can send them your stuff.
By physically going to their home office.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Just ask for the youth department.
Yeah. The youth department.
I think that's a better way of doing it.
Because I would think just the opposite. Again, if you go to Disney and you want to get on Disney Cruise Lines, obviously they've got probably a youth director there as well, but they may say, that's fine, but we actually use an agency. You need to contact them. I'm just saying it might be different here than it is in the UK.
Yeah. They do that. That Disney actually go out and here, I know that Disney have gone to actual agencies who put on shows, and then Disney Cruises go and watch them shows, and if they like you, they book you that way.
Right.
Well, that's what's happened here with Disney, but I don't know about any other. I mean, I work mainly for P&O, and so that's how I got in. But
okay.
You know.
As we start to wrap up over here, I want to kind of go around the horn here as well to find out if there's anything else perhaps that you wanted to share on this, as far as whether they're tips or some comments or something we may have left out that you'd like for the listeners and viewers here on YouTube to see or hear as we kind of go around. And then want to ask you about also, of course, what your magic word is, kind of give you a chance to think about what that might be, your phrase. Let me ask you, Paul, is there anything else that you'd like to share or to say, the question I may have not asked?
Yeah, I can just mention something else from my lecture. But first of all, yeah. I've got about 500 DVDs, which I think are very, very useful, because if you put one down and you then you it doesn't stain the worktop if you act as a coaster. So if anybody wants 500 of them, I can do you a good deal on them at the moment, because no DVDs.
And where can they find those, by the way? What is your website?
In my loft. you can find them. ColonelCustard.com is a good place to start for them. So yeah. But anyway, that's it's not a dealer dem tonight, is it? So that's not the idea of it. But right. I had a concept about 20 years ago, and it seems like it's been taken up by a lot of people in the industry, and it was based on looking at other companies, and companies tend to go for a color. I mean, you know, let's take EasyJet as an example, that they do tend to pick their orange, and any products they have would have that orange logo, and many companies you would say by a certain mm-hmm. color you'd pick them. The Colonel Custard for me happened to be, you know, the yellow, and it seemed like that any prop that I then started to buy we'd always have that yellow theme. I mean, I've been doing shows at home, you know, here at the moment, and I could just pick up loads of props in the office, which all happen to be yellow. Now, you know, even to the point, I don't know, Dave laughed at me at the point when he came to see my time and found this yellow extension lead and went, I can't believe this. I can't believe you actually go to the point that you've got a yellow extension lead. But my show is supposedly unique. Now, we know it's not. We still go to the conventions and we buy similar props. But I wanted my show to seem like it is just mine. So when you see my show, it's yellow or black, almost everything that I possess. So it's got a real good theme. And entertainers now coming into the business, yeah, often will think about that branding now and pick a particular colour. I know Dave now is really strong on the ground. It's long after that Dave bought a green extension lead, you know, so they followed along that route. So I think branding is really important to try and make yourself, you know, so-and-so down the road will be doing that show because this is the Colonel Custard show, and it has a feeling that it's just mine, although that isn't strictly true, as I say, so. Yeah, yeah, branding, I think, is, and colour towards branding, I think, is you know, an important tip.
Dave, anything else that you'd like to add that I failed to ask?
Yeah. I'm sure we could talk all night about what we do. I think the most important thing, I've always said this about my shows and what I do, is, you know, you've got to be passionate. And I mean really passionate. And you've got to love it. You've got to love it. You've got to be passionate. There is no halfway in my opinion, with doing this business. And it will show. And every detail is important, even to, you know, when you turn up at the party. The moment you turn up, that's it. You're on show. And, you know, I've always been a big believer and I've followed Paul Megrim, Colonel Custard's marketing ideas with the branding, and I've really sort of been very strong with my branding as well, and even like my vehicle is, you know, has always been a really sort of outlandish big green van, you know. I turn up, and the moment I turn up, people sort of go, okay, here's a guy that knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's just his vehicle, you know. It's just, it sets the tone, but it just comes down to be passionate about what you do, love what you do, and if you're not passionate and you don't love it, don't do it.
Well, I think that kind of is a good way of wrapping up for you with as far as giving your magic word or your phrase, and that is to be passionate. That's good. Martin, how about for you?
Well,
what would be your magic phrase? What is your passion?
Okay. Oh, we got to there already. Oh,
well,
okay.
No. Okay, tell me if there's something that I forgot to ask you first.
Say that for me, I think he's what Dave said, he's being passionate, but also for me personally, it was the name. Mr. Biscuit was very easy to remember. The kids remember it very, very easily.
Good
it's
point.
Not complicated. And I'm not Uncle somebody. I think Uncle something conjures up a age and oldness and not freshness. So for me, it was all about finding that name. And I have techniques that I teach in my lecture how to get to that name. How do you get to your name? How you find your kids or family entertainer's name. So that was the most important thing for
your
me.
Character, basically.
To basically build that character. Yeah.
I think it's important also, not only each of you have a name, but a character you have developed. And that means whenever you walk on stage, you are that person, and you know how that person or that character is going to act because you have the legend behind you. I talked with Pop Hayden some time ago. It's one of my favorite podcasts, in which he really had gone deep. So whenever he's in any situation, he knows how that character would react because he almost have to live that and understand that character. And it sounds like each of you have kind of developed a character, so are that
really
person.
Important.
Even my children, when I put that suit on, and that they didn't call me Dad anymore, they called me Mr. Biscuit. So that's how strong that character was, to even to my own children.
Okay, so what about your magic word? What's your phrase? We've discussed this before, and I know it's changed, but now we're talking about children's magic.
It does change, but I think I agree with Dave in that is that you've got to be passionate. So I can't really have the same word. So I say try to be original. Originality
is important. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm not looking for a word. It could be something, whatever you live by, whatever is going to be important. So it's important to be original. Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Paul, okay, let me come back to you, Colonel Mustard. So what do they, what is kind of your phrase? What's your philosophy of life?
Mustard.
Yeah, the reason these guys are laughing because it's custard, not mustard. But yeah.
Sorry.
That's clue.
I'm getting him conflagrated here. Sorry.
Yeah,
I'm embarrassed.
I think that's a great important one, Martin. Original. So yeah, I'll be original. Oh no, I can't be original because he's original. So let's change that phrase a little bit. Just before I give you my my phrase, I just want to just touch on something you just said there about knowing who you are within your show.
Yeah,
and I think
sure.
For every children's entertainer, that is a crucial thing to realize. Now. I'm going to say who I am to start off with. And for me, my character is not clever in any way. So I'll give you an example for a trick that is not going to work for me at all here. And the trick is newspaper tear. So tear it up and restore the paper back to a full newspaper. An amazing trick for 99% of magicians. That would be fantastic. For me, if I open that up and the ta-da moment, the kids would be attacking me verbally, but also saying, oh, it's a trick newspaper or it's whatever. If I got a child up on stage and they managed to do that, the child can look clever, and then that's you know, very important. The other character trait of mine is I get very confused on the stage and things tend to go wrong all the time, but they end up being right or whatever. So tricks have to follow down that line for me, and going around a dealer hall, that's how I would find my own particular personality, not the personality that's right for everybody else, but I know who I am on stage and which tricks are going to work for me. So that would be my answer to that. And also, just as a magic word or a magic phrase or whatever, the three of us are involved in a local magic society based in Watford by the name of WAM, the Watford Association of Magicians. And I find myself now having to speak to entertainers around the country and often around the world and booking acts. And I just feel that if you're the nice guy in this industry, people want to talk to you. You will help them out. They will help you out. Networking is so important. And it's worked very well for me. To be able to just chat to people around the country from just being a nice guy help people out where you can, and they'll certainly return it back to you. So the phrase is, be a nice guy.
Yeah, because it'll come back to you in spades. All very well said, you guys. This is great. Thank you so very much for your time. This has been nothing short of just very informative, enlightening, and entertaining, and certainly a lot of fun. Thank you guys very much, and I wish you continued success in each of your fields of endeavor of working family shows and children's shows and everything in and around your area. So look forward to seeing you all personally in the real world, perhaps this next year at Blackpool even. So
I do hope so.
Yeah. Or Dave may be over here for a lecture tour sometime.
Might absolutely
have to get together and talk about that. So thank you very much. And again, for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Paul Megrim and Dave Allen and Martin Cox. This is Scotty out. Well, how fun was that? Thank you guys very much. I want to thank my guests again, Martin Cox, Dave Allen, and Paul Megrim, for being my guests this week on the Magic Word Podcast episode. And I hope each of you have received some good information and some good tips given by these fine professionals over in the UK that you can apply perhaps to your own business of entertaining children. Before we close, I want to make one last appeal, if I can, to you listeners, to go to iTunes Store and just leave a 5-star comment. If you enjoy the show, please show us your love by just going to wherever you can leave these comments. And if it is the iTunes Store, perhaps it may be the Google Play Store or Spreaker or FeedPress, wherever it is you listen to these podcasts, there are probably some places where you can leave your comments. And if you could leave us, again, a 5-star comment, that would really help us a lot. So thank you guys very much for doing that and for helping this podcast to grow by you sharing the word, by spreading it among your friends and in the magic clubs and wherever else. Just tell people how much you enjoy this podcast and to let them know they should be listening then too. Because I said, there are a lot of podcasts out there and we're just one of them. And we are a niche within a niche, certainly. And we're trying to do the best we can and in presenting something new and different each and every week. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to be passionate, be original, and be a nice guy or gal. This is Scotty out.